Stuck on the George Springer Radio, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Brian Burke. Bottom of the hour, Louis DeBrusque, analyst for the Edmonton Oilers, former NHLer, will drop by. It is game day in the city. It is the Maple Leafs and the Edmonton Oilers. But guys, the story in Toronto sports revolves around baseball. And it's George Springer and it's Michael Brantley. Yesterday it was Kirby Yates. And we still don't even know if the Blue Jays are done yet. To put a, and by the way, the baseball, hardcore baseball conversation continues with Smith and Jones at 1 o'clock Eastern here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. But to put a sort of, you know, Berkey hockey twist on this one, I mean, you've sat in that chair. You've made those phone calls. You've had those meetings. You've held that pen before. Take us through the process of courting and signing with examples from your background and your past, high-profile free agents. I mean, this was a big one that the Blue Jays got in the boat last night.
Yeah, well, I didn't have a lot of success signing a lot of free agents because I worked for, you know, most of my career spent working for Canadian teams where we just weren't able to do it. We would pay the Canadian premium, mm-hmm. which is usually $1 million a year more just to cover for the tax differential and cost of living differential. But, the famous one was when I was in Kandahar and Dave Nolan presented an offer to Brad Richards and we got laughed at. We offered 6x6, I think was our first offer. And the agent was like, well, you're not serious, right? He got $63 million or something. Mm-hmm. So, in Anaheim, I was able to sign Scott Niedermeyer. So I think my approach was always money's the last thing we talk about. I'll talk to your agent about that. I got to sell you on me and my philosophy and how my teams play, sell you on the marketplace, schools. He had four young kids, he and Lisa. And so we talked hockey and talked, you know, area to live in and schools and all that stuff. And then I sat down with his agent and made the deal. So I think when you sell a free agent, money's the last thing you talk about. My guess is that the Ross would have gone in here and Mark and sold Toronto as a city, which is not hard to do. It's a great city. Sell Toronto, sell the livability, sell the multicultural side of the city. Fact that they've got new stadium plans. You know, it's exciting to go into a new stadium. Like the players in Calgary are all excited about going into a new arena in the next 2 to 3 years.
Sure.
So I think the last thing you get to is money.
Stewie, as a player, when you know when you're deciding, you know, you earn yourself the free agency, I think cynical sports fans just say, listen, wherever the biggest check is, that's where the player's going. It's simple. Is it that simple, or is a lot of it on environment now, especially in a salary cap universe?
Well, I can say that when I was went through free agency, where I was a little bit of coveted, I wasn't a highly coveted guy, but for me, it was about the money, where certain teams, they offered a lower deal, and I said, hey, at this point in my career, I'm 26, 27 years old, I have to sort of worry about the dollars and cents of it, and a little bit of term. So that's how I ended up in Carolina on a two-year deal, whereas some other teams are offering less money at a one-year deal. So stability, I think, is key, and you know, for Springer now, he's got 6 years and 150 million reasons why I think he chose Toronto. And when you're talking that big money, I think that's a main factor, especially in the MLB. But for me and a lot of guys, the stars, yeah, you can pick and choose where you want to go. But for a lot of the mid-level guys to lower-end guys, you got to follow the paycheck. Because what is the average career? I think it's 3.5 years. And the average guy makes, you know, $3-4 million his whole entire career. You got to now maximize the dollars you can make as a player.
You know, Berkey, you've mentioned this before, and you just did a couple of seconds ago, about the Canadian premium. And make no mistake about it, the Blue Jays paid a Canadian premium to bring in a player like George Springer. And this is someone they'd worked on from day one. Can you go, for the people that may not be familiar with this idea of the Canadian premium, just for hockey players as well, because many are under the impression that all Canadian hockey players have this dream to come home and play in their hometown and bring a Stanley Cup to Canada, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You've gone out of your way before to say, hold on, pump the brakes. That's not necessarily true.
Well, I think, you know, Joe Resnick is a successful agent here locally. And last year for Hockey Night, we did a comparison of a player playing in Las Vegas versus a player playing in Toronto. What's the take-home pay? And it was a $5 million a year player, not a star player, a good player, like a number four defenseman, but not a $10 million a year player. And even on a $5 million a year player, the tax differential was $500,000 U.S. Mm-hmm. So the player in Las Vegas took home $500,000 cash, after tax cash, more than the player in Toronto. So, and I saw, I forget which writer it was. Some writer heard me talking about this on TV the other day and said, that myth has been debunked, I think was the exact term. And I'm like, what myth? when has it been debunked?
I think that
debunked?
Was Ian Pulver. I think it was Ian Pulver that mentioned that.
The tax differential, it's real. And playing in Canada, yeah, you're loved and beloved, but you're also the subject of vicious attacks on social media to the point where, and it really broke my heart, but, and I'm going to do this on Hockey Night. I'm going to get an actual no trade clause from a couple of players, and I'll show the public that I'm not just making this up. We used to give teams or players eight teams. They could give us eight teams. They would a no fly zone. You cannot trade me to any of these eight teams, sometimes 10, but mostly eight. And the seven Canadian teams are on every list. Every list, even the Canadian kids. It's not an American gives you the list. I don't want to get traded to Canada. The Canadians give you that list because of the double whammy, the tax differential and the scrutiny. Some guys just don't want it.
The baseball conversation about Springer and now most recently Michael Brantley signing with the Toronto Blue Jays continues at 1 o'clock Eastern here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan with Smith and Jones, who will greet your ears at the top of the hour. Meanwhile, it's Edmonton and Toronto tonight. You know, Stars coming to the city. Springer's coming. Brantley's coming. Yates came yesterday. We don't know what's on the horizon for the Blue Jays, but we do know, guys, that there are two huge stars in action tonight in downtown Toronto. As the Oilers face off against the Maple Leafs, Connor McDavid versus Austin Matthews. And I'll put this one to both you guys. Stewie, curious your thoughts first. When you look at these two players who did some training in the offseason as well, both represented by the same agency, Wasserman Orr, are these two players more different or more similar? Like when you watch McDavid and you watch Matthews, do you see differences, Stewie, or do you see similarities?
I think different. I think McDavid's probably more of a facilitator and high flyer through the neutral zone. What I really like about Austin Matthews is just how he is and how he gets open in the offensive zone and how he finds little holes and ways to get his quick release off too. So both are amazing players in this Canadian division. But I think, you know, and I hate Leaf Nation's probably going to hate to hear this, but McDavid's just on a whole different level from everybody, you know, from what I've seen so far in the early on in this season. And I always use the comparison. He looks like McKinnon did in the playoffs, just that extra gear, high flying. Did you see how he caught, you know, the Vancouver defense flat footed? These are National Hockey League defense and he's making look like peewee. So McDavid's on a whole different level. But again, I love Matthews' game. I love how he's getting the puck off his stick. He's a little bit struggling right now in the goal department, but again, that's not going to go on for too much longer. So I would say probably a little bit more different than similar.
Yeah, Edler was a defenseman I think you're thinking of in the offensive zone where he flat-footed him, cut to the middle and scored.
Talk to your boy, Juice.
McDavid and Matthews, Berkey, more similar or more different?
They're completely different for me. I'm with Stewie. Connor McDavid's a greyhound, and people, I've only ever seen one player in my lifetime that could do the things that he can do at full speed, and that was Pavel Bure. The average player, when he's skating full speed, he's got to be pushing the puck. He can't carry it. He can't make plays. They have to slow down to do the essential parts of a hockey game, and Connor can do it at top speed. But this will get lots of emails. If you ask 31, 32, soon to be 32 GMs, mm-hmm. which one you take, Austin Matthews or Connor McDavid, you'd get a big split, even though publicly people probably won't admit that. Mm-hmm. Because Austin Matthews, I think, has the best shot in the league. I think he's a lethal player. And like I said this before, I'm a season ticket holder. I feel he's worth the price of the ticket every night just to watch him. He gets open, like Stewie said. He's got a knack for finding steams. And then he's got a lethal shot. He shoots the puck much better than Connor. Connor's a better skater. Austin's more powerful. Connor's got more speed. But if you ask 32 GMs, and mm-hmm. now Ronnie Francis is a GM, ask 32, you'd get a split. Everyone thinks everyone would say Connor McDavid, but you'd have a split.
And I think the lack of appreciation for Matthews in this market is the fact that they already have Marner and Nylander and Tavares, right? So if he was sort of isolated by himself or he only had one other guy, I think he'd be a lot more appreciated just based on what he brings on a night-in, night-out basis. So, again, Matthews, if I have to buy a ticket, obviously I'm buying it for both. I love both players, absolutely.
I am curious about Austin Matthews and this idea that, and listen, no one's going to confuse Austin Matthews right now for players like, you know, Bob Gainey, for example, who the Selke Trophy was named after, essentially created the trophy for Bob Gainey. But Berkey, from your eyes and from what you've seen and gathered, becoming more of a two-way player than ever before? And if so, is that just the maturing of a hockey player?
Yeah, now we call this out in real time. I know Stewie likes when I talk about real time. I don't like people in the media who later on suddenly dawns on them or someone else points it out and they're like, he's becoming more responsible defensively. I think what Austin Matthews did last season was turn into a three-zone player. He is not a 200-foot player. He's never going to win the Selke. Mm-hmm. But he said it made a commitment to better D-zone coverage. I mean, playing center in the league is – and I wasn't a center. You know, everyone thinks when I say playing defense or playing center – that I was one of those guys. I was a winger, which is the lowest skill position on the ice. Playing center, your defensive zone coverage responsibilities are much greater. You're expected to forecheck just like the other forwards are. It's a daunting task to be a really good three-zone player. And last season, Austin Matthews became a really good three-zone player. And the number of times you see him in the shot, that's the key. So when you see the camera on the front of the net and Freddie Anderson's in net, mm-hmm. how many times do you see Austin Matthews in that frame? Because he's come back and he's down low where he's supposed to be. And then you go to the other end, whoever they're playing, their goalie, and then you see Austin Matthews in that frame. That's the test. He's doing it in both ends of the rink. So I think he's become a complete hockey player without sacrificing his offense. And I love watching him. He's fun.
You know, one of the observations, further to that point, Stu, I want to hand this over to you in a second. One of the observations that people have made about the Oilers so far this season is, you know, to your point, Brian, about centers coming down low for that first pass and then, you know, making the decisions going up the ice. It seems as if Dave Tippett this year, and again, this is only a handful of games here, it seems as if they're trying to stretch with that first pass instead of making the short one and just getting it to the center. If you look at the Edmonton Oilers lineup, specifically down the middle, and we'll focus on the top three, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and Kyle Turris now, how would you play? Where would you want you? Would you want your centers down low, or would you want them up to stretch?
Well, stretching, first off, it produces a lot of boring hockey. Like when teams come out in five-man units, that's where you get the offense and the creativity, and that's really what I enjoy watching. And teams that stretch usually do it because it's the lowest skill play a defenseman can make. If you don't have a highly skilled D, anyone can hammer it up the wall. Like, I could do that. Like, you can get some guy with a low IQ and a low skill level, and he can stretch it. So that's why teams do it. It's simple. Sometimes it's a good tactic. Give your guys a little bit of a rest. The defense make it easy. I don't mind it on occasion, but stretching all the time, to me, it's low skill. It's not exciting, and it results in a lot of turnovers because the other team figures it out, and they just crash to the guy. Mm-hmm. So they're pinching, even though they're in the neutral zone, they're pinching down on the guy as soon as they see the stretch pass. So to me, I think it works at times in a game, especially if you get a furious wave of forechecking. Then sometimes say, look, guys, just step outside the zone. We'll stretch it for a little bit here and get these guys to back off.
Stewie?
Well, what I noticed from both of these teams this year, it's almost like in football where they're trying to do, you know, go for the Hail Mary from their own 1 yard line. But the top teams in the National Hockey League, they build their offense. Their centermen are there to support the puck. Okay, you know what? We're going to take care of our one end. Okay, now we got across the blue line. Okay, now we're going to support the puck and then worry about offense when we get across the blue line. So the Leafs have gotten into trouble this year where they're trying to create offense, you know, from their own crease. You know, the centermen are coming in and they're sort of swooping in, not really supporting that the defenseman. And you know why I know that? Because that's what I did. They used to call me Cheryl Swoops because I'd just be swooping around in the zone, waiting to get the puck and go on offense. So you got to build the offense. You can't hit the home run every single shift. You got to build it, build it, build it. And I think that's part of the progression of a young center in the National Hockey League. And I think that's something guys like Matthews is starting to work on. McDavid, you know what? You're going end-to-end every shift. Let him do what he wants. Put him with Hal Sopel with the Leafs now. They got to find a way to build that offense and not try to hit that home run every single shift.
You're determined to make Hal Sopel a thing here on this program. That's the second
one. He has his own Instagram account or Twitter account. I already saw it.
I love it. One of the things concerning, and there's a few things concerning, although albeit it's early in the season, concerning about the Edmonton Oilers, and I never thought I would say this when you consider the firepower and the personnel that's on it, and we'll get more into it with Louis DeBrusque at the bottom of the hour. I don't know how a team with this personnel, this firepower, can be 2-for-18 through the first four games on their power play, 0-for-7, Berkey, against Montreal on Monday night. How does the Oiler power play ring in at 11.1? Or do you just say, they just started out cold. There's no way this power play is that bad because of the personnel.
Well, it's not just the personnel. They were number one in the league last year.
Yeah.
They're the only team with both special teams in the top three last year. So this is really an enigma. This is puzzling because, A, they've got great firepower and great personnel, but, B, they established that they're a top special teams team. And the reason, they can't win without special teams. This team, that's how they got all their points last year. So it's really baffling that same coaching staff, same personnel, and the power play sucks. So it doesn't make any sense. No, I think that'll balance out. I do think it's a cold start. I think they'll get on a hot streak here and get back up to a reasonable percentage, but it's killing them right now. But this is how they beat you. Like, if you look at the score sheet, when I was in Calgary, when we'd lose to these guys, you look at the score sheet and there's three power play goals or maybe a shorty. Their special teams were always special. So when they're not special, guess what? That's not a talented enough team to win 5-on-5.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Steve?
Have you seen Justin Bourne on a Monday morning on this show? He comes with so much information jam-packed because he had the whole entire weekend to prepare. So now imagine now video coaches and the guys behind the scenes, the National Hockey League, they've been watching hours and hours and hours of power play and penalty kill and specialty teams. So they know how to play McDavid. So there's most of the time you can't really stop him, but you can find a way to sort of isolate him and slow him down a bit too. So that lack of power play success is teams are adjusting. They know what to do now. They know now, okay, you know what? McDavid's now going to, you know, make that pass cross seam and do a little loop and try to come down the hill and make a move full speed. So now they're finding ways to adjust. And I'll chalk that up just based on specialty teams, coaches. They're evolving. They're evolving 110%.
Okay, so tonight's the Oilers facing off against the Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs have won. Well, listen, when you look at it, there was an empty net goal against the Winnipeg Jets, but all their wins have been one goal so far. These games have been tight. Tonight they face off against an Edmonton Oilers squad that you might look at and say, this is a team that's going to break out offensively eventually. You look at their last two games, Edmonton's only scored two goals, one by Slater Cuckoo and one by Devin Shore. You say to yourself, that's going to change sooner or later. And there's a couple of games this week. These two teams will face off against each other tonight and then on Friday as well. But one of the other stories, and Berkey, I know you have something on this because you were with the NHL when the Fox puck was around. The NHL right now shelving the pucks with the tracking chips in them right now. Whether they're not sliding well enough, they're not feeling good enough for the NHL players, waiting for a new batch to arrive. Berkey, take us back to the infamous Fox puck, which for those that may not be familiar with it or of a different vintage, this was a puck that Fox used when they broadcast national games, where there would be almost like a vapor trail behind the puck so you could see where the trail was when it was shooting. You can make the argument it was a good idea, but the technology wasn't quite there to make it look effective on television, and the whole thing got scrubbed. But take us back to some of the issues around the Fox puck, Berkey.
Well, and everyone made fun of Gary Bettman and me because I was director of hockey operations for the league at the time. But I will tell you, a lot of older fans really appreciate it. Like my dad, who was passed away now, but my dad was never a huge hockey fan. And he loved the Fox puck because he said it made it easier for him to track the puck on the on TV.
Hmm.
But so we went to, and Glasgow makes the pucks for the league, and my friend Andre Blanchette was this great big French-Canadian guy that picked me up at the airport. Gary said, go up there and see what they can do. So I go, I'd never been to a puck factory before, but I go to in Glasgow. They're listed in Sherbrooke, but I thought they were in St. Jerome at the time.
St. Jerome?
Yeah, I thought so. Anyway, so we're taking these pucks and sawing them in half with a hacksaw, putting in a flat, very flat computer chip, a tracking device like a transponder that looked like a snowflake, like it was a 6 or 7 spoke like snowflake, and then gluing the pucks back together again. And so they're taking these prototype pucks and they're firing. They have a machine that shoots pucks at 100 miles an hour, and they're hitting right into a concrete wall, and some of them are breaking and some of them are not. So then we try them in a game. They cost $400 a piece. This is in 1993 or 94.
Yeah.
They're $400 a piece. So we try them in preseason games, and they get shot out of the rink because this is before netting, right? There's no netting in the ends. And we try and recover these pucks. They were $400. We go up to whoever caught the puck and say, here, we'll give you 2 tickets to a game, and here we'll give you a T-shirt. And we get the pucks back, right? Not in Philly. In Philly, they're like, get lost. I'm keeping the puck. And not in Boston. They're the only 2 rinks we couldn't get the pucks back. People threatened. We had these kids run up to them and offer them, we'll give you 2 tickets. And these guys threatened these kids. So
really?
Yeah.
For a puck?
Get out of here. I'm keeping the puck. So anyway, we finally got it to where it worked. But I remember I said to Jacques Lemaire, I said to him, can you have Stéphane Richer? Because Stéphane Richer had such a great shot.
Yeah.
Here's if I give you 12 pucks, you have Steph fire them and see if they break when they hit the post and so on. And he said, I got a better idea. Why don't we let Chris Nyland stick handle with a few of them? And if they can get through that, they'll be fine.
That's a pretty good story right there. Stewie, can you tell when you have a bad batch of pucks?
Yeah, well,
Stewie couldn't.
I know the pucks weren't Berkey's idea, but I think Berkey's idea was the Rock'em Sock'em robots that they used to have on the intros to the Fox games where they're fighting with the logos
right.
on them.
Oh, I forgot about those
that
guys.
That was Berkey's idea.
Good.
But the one thing I could tell you right now that the National Hockey League players, they're such creatures of habit where the smallest little detail they could tell. Every year, Easton used to come up with a new stick. They used to say it was the old S17, but we just put a new paint job on it. And guys would be like, yeah, right. It's a totally different stick. So they called BS on it. So they notice every little difference. And for a guy like Austin Matthews to say, yeah, the pucks just feel different, I believe them because they cut their sticks to the quarter of a millimeter and they can tell the difference. Oh, this stick's longer than this one. And to the naked eye, it looks exactly the same. But these guys are so particular with their equipment, they can tell the difference.
That is remarkable. Like you can tell when there's still a sticker on the bottom of the puck and it's sort of slower to push. And you can say, all right, you got to get the sticker off and make it slide a little more.
Yeah.
One thing I've always wanted to ask you, actually, is you ever broken a puck?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Take a bite out of it.
Come on. No, like with a shot. Have you ever broken one on a post?
Yeah, but again, these pucks now are so cheap.
No, like in half.
Not in a game or in a practice, yeah. You take a chunk out of it with a shot, yeah. It happened
not just a chunk,
last
but
week
like
with one of the pros.
Yes, Jeff.
I see it all the time.
It happens all the time. Guys at the post and the puck breaks.
They don't all have muffins like you, Jeff. Come on.
I'll tell you where you see it a lot is when we used to skate outside when the pucks are really cold, when it's minus 10 and the puck is frozen solid. It's not at 32 degrees Fahrenheit. It's at minus 10. Then they break with frequency. And those nets they used to put on the outdoor rinks were really heavy so that no one could steal them. And so you'd hit those, you'd break pucks all the time outside.
We're up against it. We're hitting a break. Bottom of the hour, Louis DeBrus joins us on the other side. More on the Edmonton-Toronto game tonight. Again, the baseball conversation because the big news around this city, the Blue Jays acquiring George Springer and most recently Michael Brantley. Yesterday, Kirby Yates. So the baseball coverage continues at 1 o'clock with Smith and Jones. Meanwhile, this has to be the hockey line of the day on Twitter from Eleni DeMethius. On waivers today, Honka from Dallas, Trump and Pence from USA. Hit a break. More Hockey Central in moments. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to the program. I want to let you know we're giving away the chance to meet Joe Thornton virtually. Tune in every weekday for keywords and text them to 590-590 to enter. The more keywords you collect, the better your odds are to win a spot in the video chat with Joe. Your next keyword is hockey. You can text hockey to 590-590 right now to enter. Hear your next keyword at 420 during Writer's Block. For details on how to meet Jumbo Joe Thornton, visit sportsnet.ca/590. Welcome back to the program. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Brian Burke. We are standing by for Louis DeBrusque. He is there. That's great. Let's get right to Louis. Here he is, Oilers analyst and former NHLer. And do you mind if we throw in father of Jake DeBrusque, Louis?
Nope, don't mind at all.
Is that your most proud title?
How's everybody doing today?
We're doing really good. It's an exciting day for Toronto sports, specifically with all the Blue Jays moves, with Springer and Brantley being the most recent. But this is a huge game. This is a huge game for the Maple Leafs, an enormous game tonight for the Edmonton Oilers. A couple of tough ones against the Montreal Canadiens, only scoring two goals. Questions about the offense. Barron, Jones are scratched. Heading into this one, give us a sense of what the magnitude of this one is in oil country.
Oh, I think it's pretty big. And I liked the second game versus Montreal better than the first, although they went 0-for-7 on the power play, which was the big sore spot, and I believe the reason they lost the game. You look at their 5-on-5 goals this year. If you came into the season and said after four games you're going to have 6 5-on-5 goals, 2 power play goals, and a shorthanded goal, you'd probably like those numbers. You'd say, okay, 5-on-5 is up. Power play could be up a little bit for sure, but we're not relying on it. But they needed it. They needed it on Monday night, and it just didn't happen. And what I think really happened was frustration. I thought there was a real deflation when Jake Allen made a couple saves, maybe that he shouldn't have early, a couple really tight ones, and he just started to find his groove and then started to stop everything. I think that frustrates a power play that's used to seeing a puck go into the net. But this is the thing about this division. I know you guys have talked about this at length. This has been talked about around the league at length. One win, and you're 2 points back from the team you're playing tonight. Like, that's how fast you can turn this around. They've won 2 in a row. They've won 3 of 4. You've won 1. So, therefore, you're always kind of in reach because every single point means that much in the division because it's all divisional play. So, but I do think that there is an urgency. I do think there's a desperation. And let's face it, I think that there's some people in the organization right now that are like, we need to see some changes here and we need to see some people stepping up and playing a little bit better. Simple as that. I thought there were portions of the game, again, a better response after a tough one on Saturday versus Montreal. They responded with a better game, much like they did Thursday after a bad game versus Vancouver in the home opener. Tonight, it's pretty easy to get motivated to go into Ontario and play the Leafs. It just is. They don't play each other that often. They haven't had a great record in there since Connor McDavid's been in the league. I think they've won twice. So I think that this is one of those ones on the map. They know they're going to see each other a lot. And if you go back to January, that game they played in Toronto, it was just a back and forth affair. I don't expect it to be too much different. I think it's going to be a fast game.
Mikko Koskinen seems to be struggling earlier on with a sub 900 save percentage and 3.8 goals against average. When I'm evaluating him, I'm just noticing on a lot of those goals, he's looking very small in the net, which is weird for a guy that's 6'6". Where do you think he's struggling and how can he improve his game to get the Oilers back on track?
Yeah, I think it goes hand in hand with the team. So I look at that game on Monday, Anthony, and I say, okay, listen, it's a 1-0 game. The one shot, Romanov shot, gets through the traffic. Whether it was screened, whether he's picked it up, it goes through him. So you don't like those goals. And I guarantee you he didn't like that goal very much. But then he kind of settled into the game. And I thought they battled pretty hard in front of him. They drew penalties with their speed, and they just didn't capitalize on the power play. And it would have been a different game. 100% it would have been a different game, but that's just the way hockey goes. You have to find other ways to win if your power play isn't clicking. The Montreal Canadiens come out and bank that one off his back, Shea Weber. Now, that's 2-0 at the end of the second period. It's still a reachable game. But it almost seemed like it really took the wind out of their sails. It was almost like, oh, wow, I can't believe that puck went in. We've had all these power plays. We haven't scored. And that's something they're going to have to work on. It's something they're going to have to be better at. But I do believe it goes hand in hand with Koskinen. I think he gave them a chance up to that point to do everything they need to do to either tie that game or go ahead by a couple. He was outstanding in those two periods. He was. After that one went by him, he was great. So I have a little bit different outlook on this. I just feel that, for me, it's the amount of shots that he's facing in the first four games. It's the danger zone shots. It's the shots from the blue line that are getting through that aren't getting blocked. And that those shots, you're constantly scrambling for those types of shots. You're constantly trying to find it, react to it, make a save. You're usually not going to control the rebound because you're not seeing it till the split second that it hits you. And now you're scrambling in front of the net. And both the Vancouver Canucks and the Montreal Canadiens did that every single time they were on the ice. They had a presence in front of the goaltender. They had defensemen that were willing and able to shoot the puck, and they got it to the net, and they looked for garbage. I expect much of the same from the Leafs. I really do. That's just the way you have to play the game nowadays. I think Edmonton can take a page from that and start to get more shots from the blue line through. They have to. They have to be better and more assertive at that. There has to be a presence in front of the netminder. But for me, listen, I really think there's a lot of pressure on Koskinen now because Mike Smith is out. But this was the year that I felt they were going to give Koskinen more starts anyway. So it's early. I don't like some of the goals that have gone by him. I do like his response in the game Thursday after the Wednesday loss to Vancouver. And I did like his game against Montreal. Believe it or not, I looked at that and said, okay, listen, he let up two goals where he kind of, I don't necessarily blame the goaltender. Power play that turns a puck over, a two-on-one shorthanded. You have to take the pass across. The guy beats him with a shot. The one that gets through him on a little bit of a screen, okay, I can live with that. If you're going to lose your games by two goals being scored against you all year long, you're going to have a big problem. You're going to have a real big problem. So from a goaltender's perspective, if you can keep it to two or less, you should be giving your team an opportunity to win that game.
Berkey.
Louis, you're the best guest. Stewie asks a 20-second question, and we get a thoughtful 4-minute answer. Make it so easy on us.
Sorry, guys.
Okay, I'm going to ask a really important
question. I like to talk.
I'm going to No, I'm praising you. I'm going to ask you a really important question. How was your hunting season?
It was outstanding, Berkey. I'll tell you what. No, thank you. You know what? I know you're a big outdoorsman, too. It was outstanding. One of the few years that I got to go out there and spend a lot of time. My wife was outstanding and let me go out there and sit in a tree stand for hours on hours. And I'm not going to lie, buddy, it was grueling. You don't think it is, but you're up every morning. You're out in the dark. You're sitting in a tree. You have to be still. It's freezing cold. I love all that, though, that punishment you take. So, yeah, I was able to harvest a moose this year, my first bull moose with a bow, and I also got a buck at the last day of the season in the archery zone. So for me, that's a very successful year. I don't get a chance to hunt that much during the season, but when I do, I always enjoy it.
A whitetail or a muley?
Whitetail. I actually did draw for a mule deer this year, but I just didn't have the time to go up and try and get one, to be honest. And something that in the future, that's what I'll try a little bit more. They're a little different. Eh? They're out in that open country, as you know well, being based out of Calgary there and having that land outside of town there. They're running around there pretty rampant. So that was the area that I was going to go and hunt.
Yeah, we had mostly mule deer on my property there. I was about 10 clicks east of Olds, and it was mostly mule deer that we had there. So Edmonton power play was so lethal last year. You mentioned 0-for-7 the other night. They're struggling. What's the issue? How could they be that special with their special teams last year and that ordinary this year?
You know, it sounds, and it's always, every time I say this, I know people are going to say, what is this goon talking about the power play for? But I'll tell you what, I watch it and I say they just got too cute. They got too cute and they tried to make too many passes. I really believe that. I just think that right now they're not as sharp as they will be once they get into mid-season form, which could be a few more games from now, 10 more games from now. No exhibition games. You don't have that finite feel of the puck that you do after working through exhibition games. And listen, Leon Draisaitl, one of the best passers in the league when he's on, maybe the best passer in the league. And he just wasn't connecting with some of those soft little passes that he would make. They're going to start to go. They're going to start to make those passes. But early on, I just think you have a new defenseman that wants to shoot the puck. I think you force feed Barry that puck and say, listen, pound that pill. Let's loosen up the defense a little bit. Once defense start to get out of that formation, then you can start to pick it apart with your high skill passing, which they're so excellent at down low. They're a great down low power play. They've never had to utilize that up high in the shot to kind of soften a penalty kill up. But I do think that Montreal understood that. And Montreal realized with big bodies, good sticks, and a strong presence in front of the net and a willingness to block, they could just collapse. They could stay low. They could stay tight in their formation and really frustrate the power play, which you saw happen throughout the game. They still had some really good looks. Let's not kid ourselves. They still could have easily scored a few goals in that power play. It just didn't happen. But I think once that confidence starts to snap back into it, they'll be fine because it's really the same personnel. James Neal will be getting back into the lineup soon enough. And when he does, he's going to plant himself in front of the net. He had 9 goals in 8 games. to start the year last year. And that's a real big reason why that power play got off to a great start. But they're still trying to figure out Tyson Barrie. I think Barrie's getting a little bit more comfortable in that position. I do expect to see more shots on that, though, on the power play. It has to.
Louis, let's stick with the blue line there with the Edmonton Oilers. And listen, Ethan Bear has been such a revelation and has been such an important piece of that blue line. Him and Darnell Nurse together, you know, as we saw last season, we're excellent, like just flat out excellent. What was behind the scratch of Bear and Jones the last game against Montreal?
You know, I scratched my head too when I saw that. And I watched that skate and I saw Jim Playfair skate and both of those young guys afterwards. And I really think it's just an early message. I think it's an early message to a team. They had some defensemen that they could throw right in there in Lagesson and Russell. And I think they just wanted to send a message to a couple of young guys that they believe in. This isn't punishment. This is how you have to come to the rink every day and prepare to play in the NHL. It was reads. It was a couple of bad reads. Listen, Ethan Bear played over 23 minutes the first two games, and I thought he was really good in game two. But the first game against Montreal on Saturday night, it was just one of those games where they didn't adjust to the speed in the forecheck. They didn't make outlet passes cleanly, and they just really fought the puck a lot. And late in the game on the second Tatar goal, Dave Tippett, I don't think, liked that read by Ethan Bear. He didn't like the read by Ethan Bear to leave him alone down the ice. And I really do think it was just, listen, sharpen things up. It looks like Ethan Bear's going right back in there tonight with Darnell Nurse, appearing that he's very comfortable in. And I have no doubt he's going to step in and have a solid game. He's a very solid defenseman, but he's only in his second year in the league. So, you know, you have to take that with a little grain of salt in the sense that this is a message from the coaching staff, not only to Ethan Bear and Caleb Jones. This is a message to everybody. This is how it's going to be this year. If you're not pulling your weight and you're not doing things properly, we're going to make some changes because we have players at our disposal to do that. And I think that message early on, it's hard to take, but I think in the long run, it's going to pay a price.
Stewie.
I know it's too early to conclude that if McDavid and Draisaitl aren't putting up 4 or 5 points, they're not going to win the game. But which other guys throughout this lineup up front that you'd like to see more from?
Yeah, you know, it's the age-old story here, especially with how dominant McDavid, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins. You know, listen, I'm going to lean more on the other vets. I am. I'm going to lean on a guy like Alex Chiasson, who's getting some power play time, who's been right in the mix and has had some great chances to score. He really has. He just hasn't finished it off, and I'm talking inches. But those are goals you have to have. Those are goals if you want to stay on that power play unit, you want to be a force, you have to start burying those opportunities. And that could have been a big difference in the power play. Having that guy in front to just jam home a two-footer and blast it through the pads of a goaltender or elevate it in tight and just finish it off a play that was made, it goes a long, long way because then that formation knows they have to collapse even further, take that danger away in front. It allows McDavid, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins to snap that puck around even more. So that's one guy I'm leaning on to think that he's going to have a better effort and a better outcome. I don't want to say effort. I just want to say outcome. He just needs to execute. The other guy for me right now, and this is, I'm going to go to the role guys, but guys like Josh Archibald. You know, Josh Archibald had 12 goals last year. He really turned it on late in the season. He wasn't a great starter last year either. But, you know, there's a guy that you just want to see a little bit more from on the offensive side of things because he can. Get yourself going, get yourself into it, get some more shots, couple little scrums in front of the net. And that's maybe one thing, and I know we've got a pretty truculent panel there in Toronto right now. I know that, you know, for me, I just didn't see enough of that. I want to see guys jamming away, hacking away, like really, really making the defensemen and the forwards of the opposition push you out of the blue paint. Stand there and bang away and be a presence. It really will pay off in the end, I believe. They have the speed, they have the skill to play that game, but just some guys need to step it up. Those are two guys for me, and listen, they've been fine. They just need to elevate just a little bit, and I think things will turn around for them. And here's the other one, too. Dominic Cahoon's been awesome on that second line. He has. He's fit in there as far as the chemistry is concerned, passing the puck, controlling the puck in the offensive zone. But again, you want to play with Leon Draisaitl and Kyler Yamamoto, you need to start chipping in.
Berkey, last one to you.
Yeah, that was my question. How long are they going to stay with that combination? Because it doesn't seem to be working.
You know, I've liked portions of each game with that line. They've been able to get the puck and establish that dominance in the offensive zone, snap it around, create some good opportunities. And I think Cahoon fits in nicely there. I really do. I think he moves the puck fast. He doesn't have to have it on a stick for too long to make a play, which is the way you have to play with Dreisaitl. It's give and goes. Get yourself to a spot. Get open because he wants that puck on a stick, and he can find you. He has been sent in all alone a couple of times. He's had some real, real good looks in tight. He just hasn't. He's been gripping the stick. He hasn't been able to put it home, which is not uncommon early in the year, especially this type of a year with no exhibition. You're going to see guys just trying to work through a lot of stuff. I think it's a small adjustment. I really do, guys. I know that people are panicking in Edmonton country, but I look at this and say, hey, you're four games into it. Each game after a bad loss was better than that lost game. That's the way it should be each and every time. Listen, you got a big test up against you right now, a team that's rolling a little bit right now. They're starting to find their stride, starting to find that offense. They can certainly put a lot of pucks in the net. They have to go in there and try and play a stingy, hard-fought game tonight and just really grind out a very offensive team.
You know the goals are going to come for this team with all that firepower.
Yeah, the goals are going to come. If you really concentrate, I know it's been something they've preached, but I do think to a man they understand it. It's much different, though, to think about it, talk about it, and then go out and execute it. You have to actually go out there and live it. And the only way you're going to get better at things is by making glaring mistakes from time to time. And you're going to go, wow, I can't do that again. I expect Ethan Bear to step in there and be much better. Chris Russell was actually good, I thought, in his first game. I thought he came in and provided a little bit of a punch. He's a veteran player that can just step into those crucial situations and seems to be able to roll things off of his back. He's going to stay in the lineup, it looks like. And I think that's a good call right now up against the Leafs.
Have about 60 seconds for this one. I want to take you back. I want to get an Austin Matthews question in here. To when you played with the Phoenix Coyotes, because I know your son Jake played minor hockey there as well. Claude Lemieux's son Brendan would have played in that the Junior Coyotes, or I can't remember what it was called, organization. And of course, Austin Matthews was there as well. What do you remember from Austin Matthews in that time frame? You would have been there from, I guess, late 90s to early 2000s.
It's always the easiest answer for me because, you know, Austin was a year younger than everybody. So he came in and he was playing with Jake and with Brendan Lemieux on that team. And it was Claude Lemieux that formed this team. It was a travel team. Wasn't as deep a hockey in Phoenix, so they put all these players together. But this is the thing that I remember. Boris Doroshenko was a Russian coach that coached these kids' skills. And I mean, the dynamics of what he was teaching these kids at that age was unbelievable. He made them all change the Bauer skates. They had way more support. They were doing jumping and twisting and bounding. And I mean, it was unbelievable. But I'm telling you, I always remembered at that time, the best kid that was the kid that was the best at it was Austin Matthews. He was the best kid at it. And he was younger than everybody else. Brendan Lemieux was right there as well, because he'd been doing it for approximately the same amount of time that Austin had been. But I never really fully expected Austin to take off like he did, but boy, is he ever. And he looks like he's in really good shape this year. He's lost a lot of weight. He's faster.
Yeah.
I saw him the one play in the first game where he kind of spun slowly, almost did a 360 through all the traffic and walked in all alone, and he made that look so effortless. He's looking good. That's a real good sign. I love to see young players really working on their game and trying to change things to be better. Looks like he has.
And he's worked in Arizona with Connor McDavid, and we'll see the two go head-to-head later on this evening. Louis, thanks as always for stopping by and sharing your insight. We really appreciate it, as always.
For sure, guys. Take care. Have a good one.
There he is. Louis DeBrusque, former NHLer, now analyst for the Edmonton Oilers, and also various national games that we do around Sportsnet. Hit a quick break. Back with more preview of the Oilers and the Maple Leafs. You can listen to that one tonight right here on 590. Watch it on Sportsnet. Our pregame gets underway, Hockey Central, at 6:30 Eastern. You're listening to Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Don't forget, the baseball conversation resumes. Your Springer talk, your Brantley talk at the top of the hour with Smith and Jones right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It is an absolutely huge day for the Toronto Blue Jays. That conversation is about 7 or 8 minutes away here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Meantime, Brian Brick and Anthony Stewart. Yesterday, we saw the first overall draft picks from 2020 and 2019 go head-to-head. Jack Hughes, New Jersey Devils, he looked fantastic yesterday. 2 goals, 1 assist, facing off and beating Alexi Lafreniere and the New York Rangers. Lafreniere going first in the most recent NHL draft. Tonight, we'll see the first overalls from 2015 and 2016 go head-to-head, and we've talked plenty about it all show long, as Connor McDavid faces off against Austin Matthews. Park those two for a second And Berkey, I want to get your thoughts because the last time we spoke, we were talking about Edmonton and you mentioned Jesse Puljujärvi and where you guys had him when you were with Calgary and how everybody had him in the exact same spot. I know it's early, but it seems as if he looks like a different hockey player, Puljujärvi, than the last time we saw him with the Oilers. Any differences you've been able to perceive with this guy? And listen, this is found money if they can turn this guy into a legit full-time NHLer, top six style.
Well, I'm going to show an actual scouting report from the World Junior Championships on Jesse Puljujärvi tonight on TV.
Oh, that's great.
Show it. So the thing that leaps out at me is, A, he looks happy. He looked miserable before. And he looked like Stewie before. Now he looks happy. and he looks confident. He's making confident plays.
What do you say about that, Grumpy?
Yeah, well, the one thing is we know he can put the puck in the net, scored 31 goals the last two seasons in the Finnish League, which is really, really hard to score. So I think it's just now getting his confidence, putting him in a position to succeed, let him know his role. I could see him being a 20-goal guy when it's all said and done in the National Hockey League.
And you wonder at what point, you know, if the Oilers' offensive struggles continue, you wonder at what point they start to move Puljujärvi up. He's already had a little bit of time with Connor McDavid here and there, mainly playing on that line. With Kyle Turris, you wonder if Dave Tippett starts to sneak him up the lineup even more. Leafs and Oilers on Sportsnet and 590 tonight. Smith and Jones next. Stay tuned.